Lock and load. Or is it load and lock?
Lock and load.
Lock and load. It's good to be back with you. I'm usually here on Labor Day, but it's been a couple of years since I've been with you at this time frame. The elders thought it might be good for me to take 5 or 10 minutes and kind of talk to you a little bit about what's been going on, and then we'll move into a lesson, and I'm supposed to be done at 25 after, so we will do all of that. Usually in January and February, it slacks off a little bit. We catch our breath. We get prepared for the year. It didn't slack off this year. I was somewhere every Sunday in both of those months. I'm at my home congregation 5 times a year on Sunday, and I speak those 5 times. So I'm somewhere the other 47, probably speaking about 45 of those. Have in the neighborhood of 12 to 15 week-long meetings a year, and then lots of 3 or 4 day weekend types of meetings. I have involvement with 2 congregations in an oversight capacity. One of them is in Lone Jack, Missouri, and I've talked to you about that in the past, but it's been a couple of years. We had been meeting in the school cafeteria. Lone Jack is about 10 miles due east of Lee Summit on 50 Highway. We'd been meeting in the school cafeteria and been very blessed because it's a small town and they didn't charge us a thing for 6 years. And if we'd have been in Lee Summit, that would have cost us about $1,000 a week, which would have meant we wouldn't have been able to have done that. But in December, the Lone Jack congregation moved into its building, and they've been there now since December. So if you're ever down that way and you'd like to meet with them, you would have always been welcome, but now they have a building. It's on a slab as opposed to a basement. Has an auditorium that, if you put folding chairs, would probably hold about 150. And it has a fellowship hall behind that would be used as you use your basement, primarily. But they did a nice thing. In the back, or in the wall of the auditorium, they put doors that can be removed. So if they want to have a meeting, the whole thing opens up, and they could probably seat 250, 300 people comfortably. They're on, I think, 3 acres, which they don't need, but that was what was available, and doing quite well. Next major step there, obviously, will be to find officers and appoint them. When that happens, then I'll not be involved as much. When that will happen, I don't know. We're working on it. You want to do it as quickly as you can, and it's suicidal to do it too early. And that's a judgment call. So this congregation went through that process 40, 50 years ago. I'm not sure. Was it in the 60s? Probably in the 60s, I would guess. Maybe late 50s. So most of you don't remember that, but I've heard about it. The other congregation I have oversight responsibility for is a smaller congregation in Stahl, Kansas, quite a bit smaller. They will have 50 to 60 there at Lone Jack, probably about 40, 45 members. At Stahl, they have about 12 members, and maybe 15, and maybe 20, 25 on a Sunday morning. It's a good group. It's an interesting group. It's not a large group, but they have 5 or 6 men that do everything, so they're more talented than their numbers would belie. But we've been working with them. Probably you don't know anyone from Stahl with one exception. Jeff Fogle has been up here, and sometimes he leads songs at Labor Day. And you might know him. Jeff is a member there. The rest of my time has been kind of doing what I've typically done over the last few years. This is by far my busiest segment. I had Dean Avenue last week. I'm here this week. On my way home Saturday, I'll stop at Excelsior Springs and give a lesson in their weekend meeting. And then Sunday, I move on to Ottawa, Kansas for a week for their VBS and some evening work. And then we've got the teaching at the Eminence Campout. Come home, get a week or so, and then the 2-week meeting is at Smart Road. So this is a busy summer for us, but it's a good summer. The Lord's blessed me and Donna, as far as we know, with good health. She had some rotator cuff surgery, so she's in a sling and can't drive, and she's getting cabin fever, but she'll just have to chill out and deal with that. She and I are the opposite. She gets cabin fever. I don't think I would ever get cabin fever, but maybe if I was home, I would. When I get home, it's lock and load as much as I can. We've been to several congregations. Pollock, Missouri, a small group in northeastern Missouri. I mentioned Lone Jack, Dean Avenue, Gardner, Kansas. That's Lowell's hometown, and they've continued to go ahead and meet even though he's no longer there. And but they sorely miss him. It's a struggle. It's a good group of people, but it's not a big group of people. But it's been there for, 100 years? I think they had 100 plus years that congregation and building, I think, has been there. So it's enjoyable. Brad and Nancy Rankin are key people there, and they get up here for your various meetings periodically. Clarinda, Iowa, I go there 3 times a year, and I'll make a couple of comments about that. That was where I was born, so that's kind of my tie there, but I really enjoy going there. And I will say that when the, and I'm going to mess up the name, the Iowa teens go down there. There's a name for you guys, but the Iowa teens, that really is something they really look forward to. And you've gone 2 or 3 years at least. I'm not sure how many. And they look very much forward to that. They had a family move in from South Dakota. He's a very big-time hog farmer for, I think it's Cargill, but I'm not sure about that. But he runs about 150,000 hogs at a time. But he brought him and his family, so that was about 6 or 7 new people. And when you're 12 and you get 6 or 7, that's a huge... It'd be like you getting 40 new members. It's been a real shot in the arm for Clarinda. Nice people, nice group. I spent 1.5 to 2 weeks in Indiana this spring at Newcastle, Indiana. I was there a week. I might mention a weekend study that Chapel Glen, which is Indianapolis, and Martinsville, Indiana, co-host, is really growing. I think they've done it 3 years in a row, and it's a Saturday at a state park. It's kind of a one-day eminence, except you don't have to camp out. And people come in, and people who maybe couldn't drive to Eminence or get time off, it's gone very well. We have a full day study on the Saturday and then usually a hot dog or pig roast that Saturday night. Good fellowship. And they've typically, this year they had 4 evangelists come in and teach. I was there. Doug Twaddell was there. Mike Kirby was there. Rick Sparks was supposed to be there, but he canceled because of his mom's health. And Keith Owens took his place. But it went very well. It's a nice idea. It fits a niche for people that maybe can't or don't want to go to Eminence, to still have some real kind of intense fellowship. I mentioned Excelsior Springs. I'll be stopping there on my way home, and I've got a week scheduled for them next week, in the fall. I was there in the fall last year, and it was the most amazing meeting I'd ever had. Not because of me, but everybody got sick. I mean, it just went through it. And it's a group of about 120, and every night there was 40 or 50 people sick. And I escaped that, so I guess they're having me back so they can hear me, because they weren't there. It wasn't their fault. It was not their fault. Fayette, Missouri, if you're ever down around Columbia, Missouri, it's a nice little group. Marty James has been instrumental in it. Jack Russell, which is Dee Dee's younger brother, some of you might know Dee Dee better than Jack, is a member there and his family. They just appointed Jack as an elder and to complement the other 2 elders, and they appointed Marty James, which some of you know, as a deacon, him and another fellow. A nice group. It wasn't mutual ministry in essence, although they didn't have a preacher because they couldn't afford it. But now, after 5 or 6 years of association with us, I think they're quite pleased with mutual ministry. And some of them who weren't raised mutual ministry are slowly getting into the foray. I was at Atlantis Grove this spring. I'll be there again this fall. That's a congregation of about 50 that's down around Maryville, Missouri. It's not one that we commonly put in our umbrella of fellowship, but... they also do not have a preacher, but it's largely because they can't afford one, but maybe we can have some influence with them. Just ticking off some names, I was in Long Beach, California in the fall. They have a Thanksgiving meeting, and I enjoyed being there. I'd never been to Long Beach, California to church. I'd been to Anaheim and Laverne, but I'd never been to Long Beach, and nice group. The day after that meeting ended, a car went through their building and right into their kitchen, and very fortunate nobody was there because it really did, it was on YouTube, so we got to see that, and but nobody was hurt, and all is well. So I have three BBSs this year, and this is the middle one. As I said, I'll be at Ottawa next week and dealing with that. They do an excellent job. I was down at Summersville for a week in the spring also. And those of you that go to Eminence, Summersville is quite different when the campout's not going on. I did happen to drive through the campout in first part of April, just out of curiosity, and it's amazing to see it with nobody there. They put out 150 little trees about this tall, which will last until the second week of July, and they'll all be trampled down. So I don't know why they did it, but nice people and a good opportunity. So we thank you for your support, not only financially, we thank you for your support emotionally and your encouragement. Donna and I have been very, very blessed. And we say that to ourselves many, many, many times. You know, you can think, well, why me? Why all this? Why that? And then you look around and so many people having so many problems that we're blessed. But I'm going to go out on the limb and say, so are you. So are you. And we just need to remember that so we don't get... Well, we just need to remember that. That's the end of that sentence. If you have any questions for me, I'm here all week. If you don't have any questions for me this week, I've got email. And I have a cell phone, which you will not be given the number of. But email me. That's the best way to get me. I will give you my cell phone number. I just don't like... I like Troy's idea. I was talking to him last night. His goes off at 7 p.m. And I haven't tried that. But it's nice that we can communicate as well as we can. But you're kind of like Allstate. You're in good hands. So I don't worry too much about you. I could open it up for comments or questions, but it just doesn't feel like that's what I want to do right now. This is Sunday morning. It's a little more formal, so grab me and ask me, and if I can't tell you, I won't, but I'll probably be able to. Now we shift gears. In Galatians chapter 6, verse 7, we are given one great standard. As a man sows, so shall he also reap. We also have a very serious passage in Luke chapter 12, verse 48, where it says, as a man is given, he has a responsibility to use those talents as best he can. In Matthew chapter 19, a young man came to Jesus and said, what do I need to do? Jesus said, sell this. He said, I've done all these things. He said, well, sell all that you have and give it to the poor. And it simply says, the young man went away sorrowful. We don't know for sure what that young man did. The tenor of that passage is that he probably didn't do what Jesus asked, but he might have. It was John Wesley who said, I cannot see how true religion can endure. Because religion, when it is applied correctly, will produce frugality and industry, and through them, riches and the love of riches. John Wesley was expressing a quandary. The very characteristics that make you and I Christians are also oftentimes going to make us prosper in the world. Not necessarily be rich, but we're to be honest, we're to be dependable. Employers like people that are honest and dependable. And Wesley said, well, because of that, Christians may well prosper financially, and therein lies a great temptation for them. Thursday night we're going to be talking about Christian stewardship of our finances. in a little more different light. But it seems to me like in the Scriptures, God gave one thing to help us get over the hurdle of being prosperous. And what He gave us was the opportunity and the ability to give. And when I say give, I'm not simply talking about money, although that's certainly is what pops into our minds, but obviously there is time, there is effort, there is generosity in many different forms. Paul in Philippians chapter 4 verse 18 calls this concept of giving of what we have or sharing of what we have a sweet aroma that rises up into the nostrils of God. There simply can be no holiness free from a generous heart, because God is a generous heart. Our discipleship is characterized by phrases like follow me, give, submit, all action words. In Ezekiel chapter 33 verse 10, Ezekiel asked the children of Israel, how shall we then live? And therein is probably a question that needs to ring in our hearts. It's one of the reasons I suggested our topic for this week, which is practical Christianity. We can study all the nuances of theology all we want, and that sometimes has a place. But this week we're going to be studying practical Christianity starting Monday night. The question, however, to us is our perspective on life and what we're going to do with it. Last Sunday afternoon at Vandalia, that was the only session I was able to attend, Keith Fenton in his talk challenged the audience. I don't know that I'm going to challenge you, but I'm going to present his challenge. You do what you want with it. He challenged the audience, every family or everyone in the audience, to give $100 this week to somebody that was in need. And there's not a person or there's not a family here that probably couldn't easily afford to do that. Whether you do it or not, that'll be up to you. But giving, not just when the plate is passed, not just when we feel like we have to. The poet made an interesting thought when he said, talking about the holiday season, the shopping was frantic, the gift list was long, the boxes were wrapped as we sang that old song. The toys all are open, the presents explained, the food is now eaten, glad tidings are feigned. A new year approaches, old problems remain, but this brief time of giving gives way to the same. You know, we sing sometimes, take my life and let it be consecrated, Lord, to Thee. Take my silver and my gold, not a mite would I withhold. But I wonder if sometimes our lives doesn't betray how we really feel. Our actions, those blessings that God has given us. And yet it seems to me that failure to give of whatever God has given us is simply a failure to serve. And then we forfeit the right to be called true believers. There is no more prominent thought in the, there seemed to have been no more prominent thought in the Lord's mind than giving. One out of every 10 gospel verses has something to do with giving of some sort. 16 of the 38 parables that Jesus left us with have to do with giving in some form. Jesus said in Matthew 25:40, as you do unto the least of these, you do it unto me. Not wanting to take that out of context, I think we could say, as we give unto the least of these, you give it unto me. Remember they asked him, when have we ever done that for you? And he said, well, when you did it with those that were less fortunate. It is simply a vital issue, whether it's time, whether it's money, whether it's our knowledge, whether it's our information, that our flesh struggles with. It struggles with our spirit to find a balance between giving and retaining. But it seems to me like when we start struggling between giving and retaining, we may have already fallen off the balance. Because I see the Lord to be a giving Lord. As Christians, it is simply a fact. No matter what the cost, we will pay it. No matter what the price, we will give it. And no matter what the circumstances, we will follow Him. And if we can't say that, then I don't think we're his children. We may have bought into the premise of worldly or human thought and rationale. A.W. Tozer, in one of his short little articles, I thought, captured a uniqueness about a Christian and a uniqueness that we need to realize when he said, and I quote, "A Christian feels supreme love for the someone he has never seen. He talks every day to someone who died 2,000 years ago. He expects to go to heaven on the virtue of another. He empties himself so that he can be filled. He admits he's wrong so he can be right. He goes down in order to get up. He's richest when he's poorest. He dies so he can live. He forsakes in order to have. He gives so that he can keep. He sees the invisible, hears the inaudible, and knows that which passes all understanding." End quote. No wonder the world doesn't understand you. No wonder the world doesn't understand me. And if they do understand us, then maybe we ought to reevaluate ourselves. Because the world's value system defies the logic of man, but defies the logic of God, pardon me. But the logic of God was never designed to serve man. It was designed to serve the will of God. And contrasted with and living in the society we do live in that is quite blessed, but is on the other hand morally handicapped and retarded and bankrupt. We often talk about our nation being so blessed. I guess we financially that's obviously true, but I don't know that that's really true spiritually. We live in a society that generally approaches it, get all the pleasure you can. They take the little song we'll probably sing with the children this week, J-O-Y, Jesus first, yourself last, and others in between, and completely transform that into yourself first, others in between, and Jesus last. In 1988, Rolling Stone magazine did a survey in which 40% of Americans said under no circumstances would they die for their country. I don't know what that number is today, but it probably has not gone down. It's probably gone up. And the sad thing about that is, if we're not willing to die for something, which means give our all, then it's not worth living for. If I'm not willing to die for my wife, then our relationship is kaput. And I'm not valuing her as I should. We live in a society where giving supersedes the reality of giving. Where how much replaces why. Where parents try to pacify their children with packages of things rather than elements of time. Well, it's in that context that we as Christians have to deal with this issue. Because we live in a world that believes only as you get enough assets to satisfy you, you can be happy. The problem with that is when we tie happiness to our assets, then we nullify giving. Because giving then becomes the antithesis of being happy. And that is not what the Bible teaches. If you believe that, then you simply won't give of whatever because you are giving up your happiness as you understand it. Oh, we give enough to soothe our conscience, but that's not the issue. Do we give enough of ourselves in serving the Lord to save our souls? Sometimes it's just amazing how far even the church sometimes gets away from the teachings of the Lord. In Matthew chapter 6, Jesus has some very insightful words that bear on this. In Matthew chapter 6, we're in the Sermon on the Mount, beginning with verse 19, and I'm going to read four or five verses for you. Jesus says, in familiar words to you, "Lay not up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust doth corrupt, and where thieves break through and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust doth corrupt, and where thieves do not break through and steal. For where your treasure is, there is your heart also. The light of the body is the eye. If therefore thine eye or thy heart be single, thy whole body shall be full of light. But if your eye be evil, thy whole body shall be full of darkness. If therefore the light that is in you is darkness, how great is that darkness? Because no man can serve two masters. Either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will hold to the one and depart from the other." terribly, terribly powerful verses that talk about, number one, our treasures in our lives, our vision for our lives, and our master in our life. First of all, our treasure. He says, where your treasure is, there will be your heart. It's amazing. People can look at the same coins, and some of them will see that they're round to be rolled to someone maybe who needs them more than they do. Others will notice that they're flat and stack them up. You know, it really doesn't have to do with giving, but it was an interesting thing I read this past week. It was talking about studying the Bible, and this person had a coin and he flipped it. He said, if it lands heads, I'm going to bed. If it lands tails, I'm going to stay up. If it lands on its edge, then I'm going to study the Bible. Well, we might take that in terms of actually giving of ourselves also. He talks about having a singleness of vision, a focus. How many things distract us in our lives? Really distract us from what is important. What did you and I do this last week that had eternal longevity? What did we do this last week that had eternal longevity? Yes, we have to do a few things that have temporal requirements, but eternal longevity. And then he says you can't serve two masters. Either you're going to love one and hate the other, or vice versa. And obviously he's talking about God and material things. You know, one of the things we all have to remind ourselves is we are blessed to be able to use what God has given us, but it is not ours. It's His. 1 Chronicles chapter 29 says, yours, O God, is the greatness, the power, the glory, the victory, the majesty, for all that is in heaven and in earth is yours. Yours is the kingdom, O Lord, and you are exalted as head over all. I was talking to a family not too long ago, and there are three siblings in that family, and I happen to be talking to the sibling that probably is least prosperous financially of all three siblings. But it appears, at least to me, that is probably also the most spiritual of all three siblings. Doesn't mean we can't be spiritual if we're prosperous. We're all prosperous to a large degree. But it's an interesting observation. But you and I don't own anything. We're just borrowing it for a little while, aren't we? In Daniel chapter 2, verse 20 and 21, it says, blessed be the name of God forever and ever, for wisdom and might are His. He changeth the times, He changeth the seasons, He removes kings, He setteth up kings, He giveth wisdom unto the wise and knowledge to them, and He knows understanding. If I could paraphrase that, if I were going to do a paraphrase of the Bible, it simply says, God calls the shots. And sometimes when you and I think we are in control, it seems to me that God must providentially, in His grace and mercy, slam His hand right down in the middle of our lives to remind us who's in control. And some of you probably are feeling that hand of God, maybe at this very moment. If you want to do your children a favor, don't leave them things. Leave them a legacy of giving. And they will learn that by watching you or I, either way. And we need to also remember, as is told to us in Genesis 22:14, God provides for His own. Abraham goes up onto the mountain. His faith was going to allow him to sacrifice his son. It appears Abraham had faith that Isaac would be brought back to life, but even having said that, that's a tremendous amount of faith. The ram is caught in the thicket, and Abraham expresses a new name for the Lord, Jehovah Jireh, which means God will provide. We need to remember that God owns it all, He controls it all, and He provides it all. The gospel begins with giving. For God so loved the world that He gave His only begotten Son. And it ends when Jesus on the cross says, Jesus gave up His ghost. His spirit. Everybody enters this world, every baby enters this world with their fists instinctively clenched, as if they're trying to get from the very start. The sad thing is that many adults never get past that and they die still with clenched fists, seeing how much they can get, not understanding that it's only when you give, that you really begin to get. There is simply no smaller package than a man or a woman wrapped up in themselves. And that's not a child of God when we find ourselves in that category. But I don't believe anybody has ever given anything back to the Lord and been poorer for it, or had less time for it. There will be times in your life, there will be times in my life when it simply doesn't seem fair. You seem to be doing all of the giving and everybody else is too doing all of the taking. And those who give the most are often those who are blamed the most or criticized the most. Those who try to do the most in the church are usually those who get criticized and blamed the most by others of us who are simply too lazy or too mentally mushy to do what we ought to do. In Philippians chapter 2, verse 12, do all things without murmurings and disputings. That's to be our anthem. That's to be our call. Nancy Gavin and her husband Mike lived in Baltimore, Maryland. I don't know what persuasion they were spiritually. They had three sons. Those three sons were active in their high school wrestling. And so Nancy and Mike would go and watch their sons in their wrestling matches, like you people go watch your children and grandchildren do various things. One time they went to the inner city of Washington, D.C. for a wrestling match, and they noticed that the team they were playing really didn't have adequate equipment. Their sons, a suburban high school, had the pads and all. This school didn't. Then and there, Nancy and Mike Gavin decided that rather than sharing gifts on the holidays, they would send wrestling gear to that inner city high school. A couple of years later, and they did that every year to some charity or some good cause. A couple of years later, Mike died of cancer. And the family gathered for their first holiday in his absence. And Nancy didn't know quite what they would do. Would they still give, or with Mike gone, maybe they couldn't afford it. So they gathered, and Nancy finally went to bed that evening. When she got up and went into her bathroom, there were three little cards taped to the mirror above her vanity. And each one of her sons had written out on the card a charity or a needy person that they had given to in memory of their father. And Nancy later wrote, "That's the day I knew that Mike's memory would not be lost." She said, "That's when I realized that we had taught our children how to give, not with our words, but with our actions." As one sows, so shall you also reap.